Hello and welcome to Animal Voices. You're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Lauren Corman, back from a trip to Manitoba. I'm very glad to be back, although I had a great time in minus 30 weather. I'm joined here with tech and news person, Carl Orzechowski.
That's me.
Welcome back, too.
Thank you.
So today's program, we're going to be interviewing someone who is currently working on a documentary film, and his name is Eric Prescott. He's a very well-known blogger within the animal and vegan communities, and he's making a documentary called I'm Vegan, which, of course, as the name would suggest, we'll be featuring vegans talking about why they are vegan, what motivates them. So we're going to be talking with him about his blog, Animal Friendly Life, which won a Veg Bloggy Award in 2008. And we're going to talk with him about the I'm Vegan documentary, which is still a work in progress, and he's actually looking for people to interview. So if you are vegan, or if you know someone who is vegan, then please do stay tuned, not only for an interesting interview, but you could actually become part of the film. I'm sure he would love to talk to you. We're going to do a little bit of news, and then we will come back with Eric Prescott. I'm really excited about this interview because Eric hasn't really been blogging for too long, but he is a huge name. Somebody who's really made a large impact. A lot of people know him. He's also the founder, I should say, of the Boston Vegan Society, which is really exciting. So we're going to talk with him at about the quarter after point, but I'll turn it over to Carl for some news. I should let people know, too, that this show will be archived on our website, probably within about a week or so, at animalvoices.ca. We have a show archived from before the break, before we went on break anyway. The Vegans of Color interview is now online with Joselle and Johanna. Over to you, Carl.
Thanks, Lauren. The first story today coming to us from CBC News, good old CBC News. They have a story up in the last week, and the headline is, Fast-Growing Fish Farming Can Help the Environment, Researcher Says. Fish farming has had a bad rap, but will continue to grow quickly and may be the only way to meet rising demand for seafood and isn't necessarily an environmental problem, a U.S. scientist says. The catch from traditional fishing fisheries has remained about constant for 20 years, but production from aquaculture has risen 8.8% per year since 1985, says James S. Diana of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, in an assessment published Friday. Aquaculture accounts for about a third of the total weight of fish and related products and is expected to rise, whereas traditional fishing weights may fall, he said in the January issue of Bioscience. Diana acknowledges the well-publicized problems of fish farming: the escape of farmed species that then become invasive or infect wild species with disease, the pollution of local waters by fish farm effluent, and changes in land use, especially associated with shrimp farms. For example, parasitic sea lice from salmon farms may almost eradicate the wild population of BC pink salmon in 8 years, researchers reported in 2007. But with good practices, aquaculture may be no more harmful than other agricultural techniques, Diana said. Done carefully, aquaculture can reduce pressure on overexploited wild stocks, enhance depleted stocks, and boost species diversity, he said. Fish farming is also important to developing countries where it can create employment. Seafood exports generate more money for developing countries than meat, coffee, tea, bananas, and rice combined, he said. He recommended more life cycle analyses to compare aquaculture with other food production systems. The next story coming from thetelegraph.co.uk. The headline is, Karl Lagerfeld defends fur industry saying, beasts would kill us if we didn't kill them. The Chanel Supremo said it was quote-unquote childish to even discuss the issue of wearing fur in a world where eating meat was normal. German-born Lagerfeld, who is now 75 and a contemporary of the late Yves Saint Laurent, said he did not himself wear fur, but he defended the practice saying there was, quote, an industry who lives from that. Hunters in the North, quote, make a living having learnt nothing else than hunting, he said. Killing those beasts who would kill us if they could. Animals should be killed, quote-unquote, nicely, if at all possible, said Lagerfeld, who admitted to being queasy about eating meat. Quote, "I can hardly eat meat because it has to look like something what it was not when it was alive," he said. He concluded, "In a meat-eating world, wearing leather for shoes, clothes, and even handbags, the discussion of fur is childish." In an interview on the Radio 4 Today program, Lagerfeld also said the issue of size zero models was insignificant compared to the zillions of fat people. Doctors have criticized the use of size zero models, saying it has contributed to a rise in eating disorders among girls who feel pressured to conform to this idea of beauty. But he said, quote, "In France there are, I think, less than 1% of people who are too skinny. There are nearly 30% of young people who are too fat. So let's take care of the zillions of too fat before we talk about the percentage that's left." In further questions, Lagerfeld said he viewed the global recession as a, quote, "more like a cleaning up. It was too rotten anyway, so it had to be cleaned up," he said. A spokesman for the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals described Lagerfeld as a, quote-unquote, dinosaur who had got his facts wrong. She said, "Karl Lagerfeld is a fashion dinosaur who is as out of step as his furs are out of style." Quote, "The vast majority of fur these days comes not from hunters, as he suggests, but from Chinese fur farms where no law protects the millions of animals who are routinely beaten and skinned alive." Lagerfeld's childish refusal to acknowledge the needless suffering behind every piece of fur and listen to public opinion means that he is being overtaken in the style stakes by an increasing number of designers who believe that cruelty has no place in fashion. And finally, the last story came to me through a blog that I'm subscribed to called Queer Animals, and you can find it at queeranimals.wordpress.com. It's actually a press release from the organization Mercy for Animals, and the headline is, "Gay leader of National Animal Rights Organization brutally attacked in apparent hate-motivated crime, and police are investigating felonious assault case." Nathan Runkle, the 24-year-old openly gay founder and executive director of the national animal advocacy organization Mercy for Animals, was brutally assaulted on Saturday in an apparent hate crime. Runkle is a nationally recognized leader in the animal protection movement who was recently named one of the world's 25 most fascinating vegetarians by Veg News magazine. The assault, which occurred at Mask, a gay nightclub in Dayton, Ohio, was completely unprovoked. The attacker, believed to be a heterosexual white male with no previous relationship to the victim, has not yet been identified or apprehended. Runkle was briefly hospitalized after sustaining two facial fractures, a broken nose, deviated septum, and severe facial bruising. The incident has been labeled a felonious assault and is currently under investigation by the Dayton Police Department. Runkle believes the assault was motivated by hatred towards gays and was intended to send a fearful message to the local gay community. Sexual orientation-motivated crimes are currently not addressed under Ohio hate crime laws. The laws address only crimes motivated by race, color, religion, or national origin. Gay rights advocates have long urged state legislators to follow the lead of 31 other states who have already enacted specific legislation protecting gays from hate-based violence. Runkle is the founder of Mercy for Animals, a national organization with over 25,000 members. The organization focuses on protecting farmed animals from cruelty through undercover investigations at factory farms and slaughterhouses, and through public education and advertising campaigns. Earlier this year, MFA made national headlines after releasing shocking undercover investigation footage of hens at a California egg farm crammed into filthy cages suffering numerous cruelties and neglect. The investigation resulted in grocery giant Trader Joe's dropping the cruel farm as a supplier. MFA's most recent investigation at California's largest egg farm helped to pass California's historic Proposition 2 in November, which requires that by 2015, farm animals in the state be given enough room to stand up, lie down, and spread their limbs. MFA has long worked to bridge the gap between the common prejudices which lead to oppression and abuses faced by both animals and minorities. In recent years, MFA has joined gay advocates in gay pride marches by forming human rainbows preceded by banners and declaring, quote, "No one is free when others are oppressed." The organization has also been a lead opponent of gay rodeo events, citing the community's obligation to protect animals from needless violence. And for more information on Mercy for Animals, visit www.mercyforanimals.org. And that is the news for
Thanks,
today.
Thanks, Carl. You're listening to Animal Voices, CIUT 89.5 FM. I should let you know, too, we'd love to hear from you. You can write us at animalvoices@gmail.com. can send us feedback about this program or ideas for upcoming shows. You can also join us on Facebook. You can go to facebook.com and just key in Animal Voices, and we'll keep you updated about upcoming programs. Today we are joined with Eric Prescott. He's an activist and filmmaker who founded and runs the Boston Vegan Association. He blogs at ananimalfriendlylife.com, and he is now producing and directing a documentary called I'm Vegan, and he is looking for vegans to interview. It's my great pleasure to have Eric here today. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Lauren. Thanks.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Well, of course, we're wanting to talk about your work as an activist, but we do want to highlight, in particular, the documentary I'm Vegan. So maybe we can start off with a little bit of background about you. I know that veganism is obviously very important to you. It's sort of looks like the core of what you've been trying to do through an animal-friendly life, and you've positioned it, as many others have too, as a starting point for animal ethics, as a really important thing that people can do in their own lives to create change. So can you tell us a little bit about why veganism is important to you and why you decided to do a documentary called I'm Vegan?
Sure. When I first went vegan, it was about a lot of different reasons, but ultimately it was about the animals. It was what really compelled me to go and to stay vegan. You know, when I first had those usual struggles with, you know, being vegan in the non-vegan world, it was, you know, the animals that kept me fighting against the pressures that are always put on vegans to conform or otherwise to give up even. And, you know, that's sort of one of the seeds for I'm Vegan, but I'll get to that in a minute. The reason why veganism has become so important for me as an activist is because that is the starting point. As Gary Francione, who I know has been on your show, basically, you know, says in a nutshell, it is the starting point. It is a sort of baseline for animal rights advocates, and over time I came to see myself as an animal rights advocate and realized that if we don't have people going vegan and committing to veganism, which is living the abolition of animal use in our own daily lives, how can we expect to ever see it abolished anywhere else? And so, yeah, that has become the center of my advocacy, and because I'd done some film work, mostly shorts, but also I produced a feature film, I was getting to the point where, you know, the two things I was doing, activism and filmmaking, just could not be done separately. They're both very time-consuming avocations. And so I've been trying to merge the two, and I'm Vegan is one of the projects that came out of that. It was an idea that I had to not only see how people incorporate veganism into their own daily lives, much like I had to do when I first went vegan, but also, you know, to see how normal or regular, I've gotten heat for that before, but what I mean is people who don't make a career out of animal advocacy or being a philosopher about animals, what do they do? How do they integrate veganism into their lives? How do they think about veganism? And how does it affect them and those around them? That, to me, is an interesting question, and I think it'll make veganism more relatable, and hopefully we can use I'm Vegan as a tool for advocacy, whether you take one of these profiles and you show an uncle or a friend or whomever, maybe one of these particular profiles will speak to somebody in a way that you just haven't been able to personally get out there to whoever you're trying to address. Mm.
I realized as I was introducing you that when I very first started with the radio show, and I would say, you know, you're somebody who's interested in veganism, or tell me more about veganism, and I would always get somebody to define what that term means. And it seems like now, I don't know if it's just me, but it seems like things are changing a little bit, and that starting point of trying to, of even just getting the word out there and letting people know what it's about, it seems like, I don't know, I feel heartened by the fact that it seems like it's really gaining some popular currency now, and it's becoming more of a point of conversation within mainstream dialogue. Is that your sense too, that the timing is right here, and that there is a greater sort of desire for awareness about veganism?
I hope so. I've noticed it to some degree. I think sometimes I'm a little optimistic, but certainly one of the reasons why I'm a bit frustrated personally with attempts to promote vegetarianism, people who consider themselves animal rights advocates that are afraid of pushing veganism because they think people won't accept it. You know, I think that might be a failure of ambition and imagination. I think we are at a point where we should capitalize on it, and not only capitalize on it, but, you know, the word vegan still has potential to become a very positive word or a negative word, and there you see a little bit of both out there. And I think we should be doing everything we can to create positive associations with veganism and vegans, whether it's media, you know, fictional media, TV and film portraying vegans, or projects like I'm Vegan portraying ordinary, everyday vegans as they really are in a constructive fashion to, you know, the Boston Vegan Association. One of the reasons why I founded it was because there was no vegan association in Boston promoting veganism as a way of life, not just, you know, a strict vegetarian diet or anything like that, but actually representing veganism in a positive and in a way that makes it approachable, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. So why, I know that you've been doing film for a while, but why, what is it about this medium that attracts you, and what do you think it offers to exploring questions around veganism?
Well, it's interesting. I have a fictional film that I hope will get a message out there, and I do plan on doing more work in the future, including one on animal rights in particular. But this project just sort of came to me, and I think it might have come out of the roots of another project I was developing as a book, actually, called Generation Vegan. And some of your listeners may have submitted profiles for that, and it was going to basically be a coffee table book with photos on one side and a bio on the other. It's a pretty static medium. It's pretty, you know, 18th, 19th century. Mm-hmm. And while, you know, we all love books, and coffee table books are particularly great because, you know, they don't require a ton of investment. They make great gifts. Film is a much more active medium, and especially with this whole Web 2.0, in quotes, thing going on, it's a very empowering thing. Seeing how people came together to help support this project, to fund it, you know, over 40 people, gave me money to be able to put this all together, to be able to travel around North America and to get these videos captured. These are the same people that are going to want to use this as a tool. They're going to want to, perhaps even once some of these start going up, they might be inspired to make their own, you know, to use some of the tools we're going to hopefully be able to put out there for them to include, you know, they can use iMovie or one of the, you know, little editing programs that just come with whatever computers they have, and take some of our basic elements like the music and the logo and so forth, and take that, put it together, sort of mash it up, remix it, and put it up on YouTube or whatever, and we'll have this, hopefully. I mean, you know, you can't make viral happen, but I'd like to see people inspired enough that this concept takes it far beyond just being like a little video you can show granny or a movie that will hopefully air on PBS. I mean, I want to see it hit all kinds of audiences and have a very wide reach. But I think that what makes it unique and why I was really grabbed by the idea is that it was one of the few projects that I felt was really perfectly suited for this Web 2.0.
Can you talk a bit more about how you see the film as unique? And I mean, there's so many different films out there right now, some of the more popular ones, recent ones like Earthlings or The Witness, Peaceable Kingdom. Those types of films are out there that are talking about animal issues. Why the approach of focusing on identity and constructing the film as you have in this way?
That's an interesting question, and there could be so many potential answers for it. The first thing it reminded me of was how a friend of mine in Japan had, he's involved with the dolphin issue, and originally at Animal Friendly Life, I looked at everything, all the animal issues, and, you know, trying, spinning myself till I couldn't even see straight anymore, realizing that veganism was really at the core of all of it, and that's why I started focusing on it. One day he said, yeah, you become a vegan blog, haven't you? And the reason for it is because, you know, without people changing the way they see animals, it's not going to change. All animals are in danger of some sort of exploitation, use, or harm, whether they're free living or animals that have been, you know, bred and are kept captive and used for our purposes. And so, first of all, that's the focus on veganism. And then secondly, in terms of advocacy, I have heard movies like Earthlings referred to as a vegan maker, and I'm glad people do go vegan as a result of that, but not everybody does. People respond to other people, and these days a lot of the eyeballs are in places like YouTube. You see them posted, the videos posted on people's websites, blogs, on Facebook, and everywhere, and that's how people are consuming a lot of messages and content. And for me, you know, an hour and a half to 2 hour movie of brutal imagery depicting all the different ways in which we use animals can be powerful, but it kind of, you don't need that much time to make the point you want to make and get across to people, and to do it in a relatable way that doesn't necessarily drain you and require days of therapy afterward just to, you know, to function, because it, you know, it's a great film, but it's numbing. Mm-hmm. I feel like if you sit down for 3 to 5 minutes and you watch this profile a friend sent you, and you're like, hey, you know, that guy does, he's an accountant, I'm an accountant, he does this just fine. He brings his lunch in a brown bag to work, and he, you know, he's got some fun hobbies and friends, and, you know, he's a perfectly normal human being, and he's vegan, you know, and he has some really good reasons for it, and maybe we'll incorporate, you know, 10 to 20 seconds of animal footage if necessary to illustrate a point, but that's about it. And, you know, in the end, the person watching that video may well make more of a connection than if someone said, hey, will you watch this 2 hour movie because I want you to go vegan, you know. And that's my suspicion, that movie, that's one reason why I'm vegan, as the movie will be so much different. I am planning to, if the footage works out, put together a full length a documentary version for like PBS or whomever, and that would be a longer sip. It's still focusing on people, telling the stories of people, and as the industry in particular, the documentary side of the business will tell you, it's the stories of people that sell, the ones that people want to see, more so than an overview film. Like, you know, because before I was working on an overview film, I haven't completely abandoned it yet, but it's definitely on the table, and it's based on The Food Revolution by John Robbins, and I'd shot a couple of interviews for that, and it was going all right, but it's a big film, cost a lot of money. The usual problems with raising money for a movie were an issue. And the other thing is, you know, I talked to a bunch of people. I have a letter of support from POV at PBS, but, you know, they recognize, and others recognize, how difficult it is to sell a film that doesn't have a central character or some kind of people to identify with and to respond to connect with.
Mm. I think that was one of the things that stood out for me, and some other people I talked to about Sharkwater, was that you could follow the main person throughout and see his story unfold in relationship. And I think that was something that was also critiqued about the film, that the emphasis ended up being on him and not being on the animals. But from my perspective, I think that people are interested in a story, and that it's easier to identify. You talked a little bit about this with the person in front of you telling that story, and moving you through their own experiences.
Right. Well, I think it helps you create a narrative, and ultimately storytelling is about narrative. And if you can follow some person's journey, and in Rob's case it was a bit like a hero's journey, then you're going to create a compelling story that people are going to watch, hopefully. I don't remember what Sharkwater did, but I saw it, and I mean, I don't know what it did financially, but in terms of how it went as a story, I was really compelled to see what was going to happen next, and what the journey was, and the process. Everybody learns plenty about, you know, the shark hunting industry, and you know, how their image of sharks is completely out of touch with reality. So for me, I thought it was a pretty successful film. Anybody saying that was a problem that was focused on him, maybe they just aren't film people. They're animal people who are worried that he's trying to become a celebrity or something, which he clearly is not.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you before we go to break, this interest in narrative and storytelling. Are all stories about why people go vegan good stories? I know that in An Animal Friendly Life on the blog, you talk about, you look at some of those base underlying principles that Gary Francione has outlined, and one of them is a commitment to anti-racism, anti-sexist politics, etc. And I'm wondering about how you make those editorial choices about whose story is the best story to tell or to allow to feature. And I'm wondering, in particular, if someone positions their veganism in a way that you don't feel actually addresses those other issues, or maybe has racist, and a racist inflection to it, etc., where do you go from there, and does that become part of your series?
Yeah, that is one of the critical questions, and within the profiles, I'm not sure how much I can or want to explore it, because I only have a short amount of time, and it's not really about exploring the complexities of a question like that. It's really about getting to know how... I think those are going to focus more on practical considerations and less on ideological considerations. I am going to lean more towards people that are vegan for the animals, because I don't think someone who's vegan for health is necessarily vegan in the sense that they're not going to wear leather shoes or, you know, wool and those sorts of things. And to me, that's not a vegan. That's a strict vegetarian or so forth. So I am going to look at it from that level. But in terms of where they're at on the level of, you know, do they support welfareist advocacy work? Are they abolitionists and those sorts of things? That is a question that's probably better explored in the feature version of the films. I'm putting together sort of the most representative profiles and extending them out and, you know, putting them together with a narrative. I'll probably end up having to do what Rob did in Sharkwater and put myself in the movie so that my journey in meeting these people and sort of the narrative would be meeting them and seeing their different perspectives and perhaps reflecting on my own views and on the matter once, you know, it comes in. And obviously a lot of this is going to depend on what footage I get, but that's right. Sort of the general idea.
Okay. I'd like to hear more about your story. You really piqued my curiosity on your website where you talk about you had an eye-opening day of reading. I know that you were interested in and sympathetic to animal issues before that eye-opening day of reading, but I'm wondering what you were reading and how you got to the point that you are right now with veganism. So could you tell us about your story of going vegan?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I'm asking people to tell me their stories, and mine's a little vague. I have a tendency to get lost on the internet, and then I wonder how 4 hours passed. And so that's sort of what happened on that fateful day, April 20th, 2002. As a writer, I was, you know, on a screenwriter's message board. It's one of those private boards where people get together and talk about what's going on in the business and so forth of screenwriting. And someone on there had a link, sort of a signature that was linked, and it said Moo, M-O-O. And I, being a writer, of course, procrastinated terribly and was wondering what that meant. So I clicked on it, and 4 hours roughly had passed before I looked up and realized what time it was, and by that time I had decided to go vegan. So I can't tell you every site that I visited and if there was one particular site that did the job, but as you can tell, the internet was clearly a deciding factor in me going vegan. I didn't read a book. I didn't see a movie, per se. I'm sure I saw a decent amount of video content. But ultimately, that was the way that I went vegan. I think veganism is accelerating to some degree. It's hard to measure what, but I do feel like it's around more, and I certainly see it more often, and I think that is because of the internet. So I feel like my story is sort of a story that is not universal, per se, but it really reflects on how modern people, mm-hmm. young people in particular, receive their content, their messages, their information, and what has an impact on how they view the world and what their ideology is. And I think that's why it's important, as many organizations, I believe, recognize why it's important to be online, because you are reaching people. This is not just fun and games. You're actually having an impact out there.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember how you felt then once you tumbled down the rabbit hole and started learning about those issues in that way that day?
I don't remember exactly. I remember my jaw sort of dropping in that, you know, metaphorical way. I was pretty floored. I had never really thought about food production before. I had a great uncle who owned a farm, and while I was never a farm kid or anything like that, you know, when you spend a week visiting somebody on a farm, you just sort of assume that's how it's done, and you just forget about it. You know, you put it out of your mind, and you know, how you eat is how you eat. And I didn't have that Donald Watson moment where I was faced with a cow and I just realized that, you know, no matter what kind of farm it is, it's a horrible farm. I just grew up taking animal use and consumption for granted, like many of us. And it wasn't until I was at the right place in the right time in life where I guess it wasn't such a difficult leap for me to make at that point, for whatever reason, between being presented with this compelling evidence for veganism being perfectly healthy, and, you know, that animal use was apparently on a very wide scale, very harmful to animals. It just seemed kind of obvious to me. I remember making a decision very clearly and rationally and very, very quickly, you know. I mean, there's this point where I wasn't vegan, and then I realized, oh, wait, I have to do this. And then I know I spent a decent amount of my research just, you know, learning about veganism, like what does one do, how does one cook, what kind of foods can I eat, you know, things like that. You know, I don't even know how much of it spent on the animal side. It's probably less than half. Hmm. So it was one of those things where it's just a light bulb went off, and I was like, oh, well, I have to do this. And I realized it's pretty different from a lot of people. I as part of BVI, I do newcomer orientation for people that are new to the organization or new to veganism, and I can kind of see where they're at and what their needs are and tell them about the organization. And I find out from them at this meeting oftentimes what was their vegan story in a nutshell. And a lot of people, you know, were vegetarian first and then became vegan, or they had troubles with vegan and now they're trying again and they want to be around a bunch of other vegans to help make it stick. And, you know, for me, that was never really an issue. So it's interesting for me and useful to help me understand the needs of other people, because it was super easy for me. I just made a decision and I stuck with it. And I wish I knew how to make it that easy for everybody else. And I'm hoping that I'm Vegan can be one of those resources that makes it easier, because, you know, one of those profiles is hopefully going to be useful for somebody. And maybe that'll be that missing link, that piece of information that makes people realize, oh, why am I not vegan?
Mm-hmm. Do you at this point, I know that you're still soliciting people to interview, but through your journey with activism, I know that you've met a great deal of people who are vegan and who are interested in these issues. Do any of their stories at this point, without giving maybe too much away, but do any of their stories stand out as particularly poignant or interesting, something you might like to share?
I do want to hold on to, I mean, to for the applicants or the submissions to their stories, I've been scanning them, but not really reading them deeply, and I haven't done any follow-ups, so I don't have filled in details, and I don't know if it'd be really interesting for radio. But I am certainly looking forward to having them recorded and put up, and hopefully there'll be some really compelling content when we get there.
I think you'll probably happen upon some pretty bizarre stories, too. I know a friend of mine went vegan and really started getting interested in animal issues after he went to a steakhouse, and he was cutting into a piece of meat, and there must have been an air pocket, and it looked like the meat exhaled in a way as the air was leaving the piece of meat, and it was enough to make a link between a living animal and what was on his plate. So some for me over the years have really been interested in people's stories as well, and some of them were really really shocked me. I was wondering if we could go into maybe some of the critiques that I'm anticipating about the film. I know that that some people have felt that a focus on veganism is too individualistic, and it focuses on kind of consumerism, kind of almost people sometimes see it as kind of a greenwashing, that it's too surface and doesn't get at those more systemic issues that really inform veganism and sort of makes it all about personal choice and doesn't do that kind of larger analysis. Could you speak to that a bit?
Sure. I think, well, there's a lot in there, and certainly as a blogger and as an activist, I try to steer people toward veganism from the point of view that we ought to respect animals and that they have an interest in not being harmed, and that it's, you know, well near impossible to have animals used for our purposes and not have them be harmed, and therefore we ought to go vegan for that reason, and not putting veganism out there for any other purpose. There are a lot of people that just use veganism as a tool to reduce suffering or to otherwise achieve some other goal. But for me, veganism is just sort of a commitment to living the principles of animal rights in your daily life. You know, as we've talked about, it's the starting point. It's certainly not the ending point. I think it's key to keep in mind. You know, as you mentioned earlier, I try to see the connections. I don't write about this as much at my blog, just based on the sort of the corner I painted myself into there. But there are ties to other issues here, whether it's anti-racism or the other isms out there that are all part of our sense of entitlement or dominance over other people or other beings. And those are certainly things we ought to be looking at. Those intersections are critical, and some people get a lot of traction out of making those intersections apparent when they're doing advocacy work, you know, because some people might relate to those connections better than others. Some people don't see it. And some people would say you just need to push veganism however you can, whatever's going to get people to go vegan, whether it's pitching it as a healthy diet or good for the environment or whatever. I disagree, but you know, you can see that there's a lot of different ways to pitch it, and I just think that if we're going to look at veganism being a term that incorporates ethics and incorporates the idea that animals aren't here for our use or that we ought not to be using them if we don't need to, then we ought to be, if we're out there advocating veganism, promoting it from that point of view, because that's what veganism really is. Otherwise, we're just pitching something else. You know, mm-hmm. if we're pitching it for a health reason, we're pitching strict vegetarianism. Let's not call it veganism. And, you know, to the credit of some of the large organizations that do sell quote-unquote veganism as a healthier alternative, a lot of them do say vegetarianism. You know, I'd prefer they were out there promoting veganism, you know, as an animal, you know, step towards accepting animal rights. But I think that at least, you know, if they're not confusing the two, if they're not calling quote-unquote vegan for health reasons veganism, then that's actually doing us a favor, because right now it's so confusing now. Labels are a pain as it is, right? But if we're going to have them, we've got to at least try and use them right.
Mm-hmm. So that's part of the work of the documentary series, is to try to carve out maybe a clearer space of what veganism entails, what it can mean for people.
I think I see that's being where the future is going, and I'm glad you're bringing it back to your original question, because I think the work of the documentary is sort of to help pave the way for veganism being an option that is more omnipresent, more ubiquitous, because it helps create the discussions. When someone finds out you're vegan, they want to know about it, you know, and the more they hear about it, the more these conversations happen. And if people, you know, are well-informed, and hopefully they've got a copy of the Boston Vegan Association's pamphlet that they can hand that person, you know, which makes a case for animal rights and for veganism from a rights-based perspective, then hopefully we're laying groundwork. You know, I'm hoping that the videos create enough of an impression and become sort of a tool to create awareness of veganism and vegans and make it more commonplace. My idea is to normalize veganism, that being vegan, that not relying on animals for entertainment and clothing and food is sort of the way things should be normally. You know, that's not something unique or freaky or weird, but that's kind of what we ought to be seeking as a just an everyday sort of behavior. And then secondarily, of course, they're a specific kind of advocacy tool that people can actually share with others to hopefully inform them about veganism.
Mm-hmm.
I think the normalizing component is critical. So it's less ideological in that sense and more about just, hey, look, here's veganism, and it's perfectly normal. You don't have to be afraid of it. It's not, you know, you don't have to go and break into a lab and rescue animals in order to be vegan. You know, you can just be your computer programmer self and not exploit animals by purchasing. You know, again, you mentioned the consumer aspect, and I do want to address that. Clearly, to the extent that veganism affects your choices, when you make choices as a consumer, you're going to come up with the vegan question, is this vegan or not? That doesn't make veganism necessarily something that focuses on people's consumption. It's more about directing people's decision. I look at it as like a compass, you know? Every choice you make in life ought to hopefully reflect your values.
I thought it was interesting how you just a few minutes ago you said, when you're vegan, people want to know. And it made me smile, because I've met so many people over the years that find out that I'm vegan and they don't want to know. They don't want to have that conversation. It's instead of it being a door, it's a wall that immediately goes up. And that's really been sad to me. For me, you know, a lot of people will say, well, you know, your vegan people must ask you questions all the time. And I don't know if it's because I do the show or because I've dedicated so much of my academic work that people don't even want to, like, go there. Because they're anticipating a flood of responses or me getting upset or something like that. But I've been struck by people who really don't want to know and aren't ready to know. And I was wondering maybe if you could talk a little bit about that, because I'm guessing maybe somebody listening is thinking, who's going to seek out? It's only going to be the vegans who are seeking out a short film about, or shorts about, why someone's vegan. What will make people want to go and look at these profiles?
Yeah, I think you raised a couple of good points in there. I don't think that everybody I ever talk to wants to know why I'm vegan. Well, actually, they'll say they want to know, and then, like you said, they'll kind of shut down. I think those tend to be people that are expecting, like people who say, how was your day, you know, and you say, oh, well, da-da-da-da, and they're like, oh, they glaze over, right? They didn't really want to know how your day was. They're just being polite. sort of like that. And I think also you had a point about being pretty active. I think that when people don't know that I'm an activist, the story is much more interesting to them because I'm just another regular person. Mm-hmm. As opposed to when they find out I run a vegan association, then they know my agenda is to convert them as opposed to just talk about my own veganism. So the great thing about the I'm Vegan documentaries, the profiles, is that these are people just talking about their experience. They're not talking to the viewers saying, you have to go vegan because of this reason. They're just saying, look, this is my experience. This is how I incorporate veganism in my life. This is why I'm vegan. You know, it's all about them. And you can just watch and be a sort of a disinterested third party, you know, a sort of a peeping Tom almost into someone's life. And there's nobody there to, like, make you feel bad or to make you feel like you're not doing enough or that you have to make a choice or that you're a bad person if you don't do what I'm doing. It's, you know what I'm saying? There's this distancing that occurs through the mediated experience that I think helps somebody, particularly non-vegans, watch it out instead of feeling judged. You know, they can watch it more impassively and make a, you know, if they do connect, great. But that means they're connecting of their own free will, not because someone's, like, grabbing them by the lapels and saying, you must listen to me! Mm-hmm. Animals are suffering and dying! Mm-hmm. And I think that what will get people to actually watch those are two things. One is that the great thing about this Web 2.0 thing is that these videos will hopefully end up everywhere. Facebook profiles, MySpace profiles, blogs, and of course people just surfing YouTube and coming across it, or somebody doing a search on veganism because they're kind of curious because they heard about it, but they don't know much about it. And they'll sit down and they'll watch a 3 to 5 minute profile. They may not watch a 12 minute, you know, Meet Your Meat, or they may not watch a 90 to 120 minute documentary. But 3 to 5 minutes, sure, I got that time to kill. You know, I mean, it's my coffee break. Why not? Mm. See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one aspect of it. And then the other aspect, of course, is, you know, if somebody says, please watch this for me, you know, they actually send it to you, a specific profile that they think might appeal to you, then you may be more likely to watch it as well. And that becomes more of an advocacy tool. It's a referral thing. And so you get this, you know, you can email links, you can post them to other friends' profiles, things like that. There's this exchange of information that goes on. It's not as passive. It's somebody saying, listen, I know we've talked about this, and I know I haven't really done a very good job of explaining it to you, but here, this person reminded me of you.
Mm.
You know, and with the only 3 minute investment, if you say to them, just take 3 or 4 minutes to watch this and let me know what you think, somebody's much more likely to make that investment. I think that's critical to realize, especially in their short attention span culture where, you know, everybody's got their iTunes on shuffle play instead of listening to the whole album, and people click around YouTube literally just so they can get those 1 to 2 to 3 minute forms of entertainment between projects at work or whatever it is they're doing, not working, you know. So I think that's going to be, sometimes these things take a life of their own, but at least in terms of how I see it right now, I think that's how people that aren't vegan are going to be consuming the project, in the sense mm-hmm. that they're actually going to sit down and watch it.
I wanted to ask you a question that's, I guess, truly pessimistic about veganism, and I'm playing the devil's advocate here because I've been vegan for a long time myself. But how do you respond to people who really just, I know that you talk about it as a starting point, but for people who really just don't think that veganism makes that much of a difference, you know, people, you mentioned people going online and clicking around, and the amount of suffering really that is portrayed on the internet, for example, once you start learning about the billions of animals that are used and abused in various different industries, let alone those individual acts of cruelty against animals, it can be quite overwhelming, and veganism sort of can feel like a token gesture in the midst of that that really doesn't have that much of an impact. Could you speak to that a bit?
Sure. Well, you know, I don't think it's a token gesture just because, for me, you know, I'm not a consequentialist. I think that it's the right thing to do. You know, I don't think that I should be vegan because it's a boycott. I don't think that me as one person is going to make a huge difference in the end of things, you know, in terms of how the industry functions or whether or not it's going to go under. It's clearly, if a lot of us do, it will make a difference. But really the point is that it's the right thing to do because I respect the right of animals not to be used merely as objects, you know. And for me not to do that would be not living right with myself, with my own belief that it's wrong to unnecessarily harm animals. And so that's why I'm vegan, and I hope that through my advocacy work I can impress that upon people. And I think if you can come to it from that point of view, you have much stronger belief in veganism for what it is, because it is a commitment of those principles, and you're more likely to stay vegan. And it doesn't require, you know, unless you need some empirical evidence, a whole lot of shocking and appalling imagery, you know. I mean, it's fairly conceptual. Some people don't respond as well to that, and they want to see shocking stuff, you know, to prove it to themselves that there is a problem. but ultimately, something like I'm Vegan, that's not even going to show that much stuff. If at all necessary to illustrate what somebody's saying about slaughterhouses or something, we'll you know, insert a little footage so that we can, you know, keep it from just being talking heads and so people know what that person's talking about if they've never seen this stuff.
Mm.
But ultimately, perhaps this would be something I get to with the feature version of it when I tie it all together and you know, look at it all. I mean, for me, it's about doing the right thing. It's not about whether or not, because of what I'm doing, 1,000 more people are going to go vegan and we're going to actually have animal rights by the time I'm 90 or something. You know, I just, even if animal rights will never actually, you know, be recognized by law, I know it's the right thing for me to do. And I think this is something that a lot of critics of abolitionism and other critics have said about animal rights in general, that animal rights aren't really enough. You know, I mean, we have civil rights, we have other rights, and there's still all kinds of discrimination and harm going on. There's sex trafficking in Southeast Asia, there's child slavery more or less in on the Ivory Coast and, you know, in the sugar plantations and places like that. And all these bad things are happening around the world, and even in the U.S., you know, where people are given the right, you know, very civil rights, are still being disenfranchised, and there's still racism running rampant through our country. And I don't know about the situation in Canada, but certainly down here, it's, you know.
Oh, yes.
You still come across plenty of covert racism, which hopefully I can address in a future documentary. But the legal rights don't change that. All they do is they create sort of a baseline for what a culture accepts as permissible on a legal level. So, you know, you can't expect that that's going to do everything. What's going to make a difference is you personally committing to the idea that it's wrong to unnecessarily harm animals, and then to practice that, whether the law's there or not. You know, the law's just there to help get those in the line that don't agree with it down the road. But, you know, if there's someday 70% of Americans or, you know, North Americans or whichever country does this first, you know, England, whoever, someday does want to recognize the rights of animals, great. But in the meantime, that's not necessary at all. We can all become vegan today, and that's only just going to make it that much easier, because obviously if we're all still using animals, they're not going to ever be given rights, because we're just never going to abandon our dependency on them, you know?
Mm. We're down to the last 2 minutes for the interview, and I wanted to turn it over to you if you want to do some outreach for people who maybe want to get involved, or any last thoughts that you have that you want to share with our listeners before we go.
Well, there's two last things. Well, technically two and a half. The first one, real quick, is that we do have the Boston Vegan Association did put out a new pamphlet recently, and I have been yesterday exchanging emails with a benefactor who wants to help us produce that literature in a way that will allow us to offer it at no cost or at a nominal donation, just to make sure that pamphlets aren't wasted. And before, we were just going to be offering them at our cost, which would have worked out to 20, 25 cents each. So people should get in touch with me at eric@ananimalfriendlylife.com or eric@bostonvegan.org. And if they're interested in learning more about that, because we should be getting a check for that soon. And I'd like to get as many pamphlets out there as possible to get that message of veganism from a rights-based perspective out there. And then secondly, a lot of people had questions about the photos I'm requesting. Go to vegandocumentary.com for the casting information. I'm going to keep casting open for another few days till the 15th, so people who are listening to the show have a chance to submit. It does ask for photos. It's just so I can get a feel for people, you know, in scene, as well as to ensure diversity. I'm really concerned about finding non-white candidates. I've got plenty of white candidates. Obviously, there are a lot of white vegans. That's one of the jokes that stuff white people like, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to, you know, show diversity. I'd like to show people of all backgrounds that veganism is something that's accessible to them, and it's hard to do that if they're not represented. So if people listen to the show, you know, if you're young, you're old, you're black, you're white, you're able-bodied or disabled, whatever, you know, your background is, or whatever, whoever you are, it doesn't matter. You just be vegan and get in touch with me, and let me see who I'm talking to or whose answers I'm reading, so that I can kind of get a feel for you. And I'll hopefully have a very diverse quote-unquote cast, and that's
right.
What I'm really looking for.
I know that, we have to go pretty much right away, but you mentioned that you're going to be traveling through the United States, and of course this is a Canadian show, that we podcast, though, internationally. So I'm wondering, will people who are not in the U.S. be part of the film?
Thank you. That's the other thing I wanted to bring up as point five there, and that is I am getting submissions from people who are ambitious enough to get me to change my mind, from Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver, and I believe a place between Toronto and Detroit that I've forgotten the name of. But
Windsor?
I don't remember, but it's in there.
Okay.
And my feeling is that I probably will do it, because none of those cities are that far into Canada from the U.S. I've got my passport, so I'm going to try and incorporate that in there, because there's some interesting people that have submitted, and I'm sure there's many more interesting people in those cities. So I probably won't be going to any other cities other than those major cities, because they are relatively accessible. But if your listeners are interested in being profiled, they should definitely visit vegandocumentary.com for details, and I'll probably be passing doing the Canada portion towards the end of my shoot, which is going to be mid to late March through mid-May. So I'll probably be in Canada late April and sometime in early to mid-May.
Great. And of course, after it's done, we'll be pressuring you to do something overseas as well.
Well, there are people in China and in England and Australia all want to participate. I've got different ideas I'm planning for quote-unquote sequels or ways to get people involved that won't necessarily require me to find money to actually go there. So yeah, keep your eyes peeled for news on that front in a couple of months or so.
Great. Thanks, Eric. We're out of time. We actually went over a little bit, but it was really great talking to you. I'm excited about the documentary series I'm Vegan, and hopefully we've raised awareness about the project and people will get involved even more. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
We were just speaking with Eric Prescott. He's an activist and filmmaker. He founded and runs the Boston Vegan Association, and he blogs at animalfriendlylife.com. Thank you, Sergio. Sorry we went over time. Please stay tuned for Dos Mundos coming up.